हरेः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
What, last paragraph, page 5?
Page 6.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Okay. Jnana Yoga begins with research into the subject of Kshetra and Kshetragya. The first, Kshetra, is the field of 24 material elements that combine to form the gross material body. Natural transformations of that field cloud the knowing potency of the soul, who has somehow or other come to be situated in the field. This cloud of maya, illusion, casts a shadow of consciousness in the form of the mind. Within the mind, material desires, hate, enjoyment, lamentation, and so on. This mental consciousness is no less than a living entity's material existence. The fact remains, however, that even as he clings to illusion, determined to be the Kshetra instead of its knower, the living entity remains always what he is, pure spirit soul. By proper application of Jnana Yoga, as directed by Vedanta, even such a confused soul may recover the correct perception of himself as Kshetragya. As such, he is serenely transcendental to the actions and reactions of matter. So the soul, no matter what his position is, he's still transcendental. He doesn't think so, he doesn't act like it, but he is. So this position then, but through the process of Jnana Yoga, then one can reawaken, so one actually understands. One then stops to identify with the field and starts to behave as the knower of the field. Because this is the whole point, is that if you think you're the field, then you don't want to deal with actually observing or analyzing the field, other than for one's own purposes. Like one may analyze the field to get more out of it, but it's just like you analyze yourself so that you can figure out how to get more out of it. You know, how to make yourself looking nicer or more strong or more healthy or something that was there. You identify with the body, you try to improve the quality of the body. So that you might do. But to analyze whether you are the body or not, and what the consequences of that, we might not be inclined. Right? So in the same way, as the living entity is not inclined to look at how he is supposed to be the observer of the field, not the field itself. So, because if you are the observer of the field, that means then, even if you consider, then we'd have to actually look at it, that I'm the soul, so I'm not the field. Right? Then there's the supreme soul, and the field belongs to him. Therefore, if you're going to deal with someone else's property, you have to deal with it according to their rules. Right? So now that's a problem. Now if I have to deal with the field according to someone else's rules, that means it's not my rules. Right? It's God's rules. Therefore, then, we see is that instead of intelligently addressing the principle of attachment, the living entity determined to remain as the kshetra, as the field, then will give emotional responses or reasons for their involvement in that way. Right? Does that make sense? Being practical, this, that, being realistic, all these, very hackneyed, methods of trying to say that I'm okay, just leave me alone. You know, what's your problem? Right? So it's an emotional response. Why? Because they don't want to apply the intelligence. So they're situated on the platform of karma, fine, but then make it karma yoga. Right? So it's not so much the knowledge aspect, but you are interested in the operating the field, the skills necessary for that, and the results gained from that. So then do that according to Shastra. But then you're dealing more now with religion, with culture. Then it's a problem, because if I'm pious, I want to deal with, you know, the appropriate, you know, sattvic culture. I'm not necessarily, by some scars, so pious. I'm not so interested. Right? Does that make sense? So then that has a tendency is that I will reject it on that platform. So not only I'm rejecting the knowledge, but I'm even rejecting, you know, proper karma. Right? And saying yukta vairagya. But yukta vairagya means that the yukta is there based on the principle, religious principles, and the vairagya is also there. Right? What most are saying is yukta. I'm making contact with this. I'm interacting with this. But vairagya means I'm interacting with it without a desire for the results. So nishkarmya, you know, nishkam karma yoga, that's yukta vairagya. You're able to take the elements of the material world that are generally seen as elements of affection and deal with them from the platform of the results are not for me. Right? Either from, okay, they're mine, but I will give them away to Krishna, or they're not mine, I'm performing my duty to please Krishna, so the results are also therefore Krishna's. Right? Does that make sense? So this element then of this jnana yoga, then it begins with this simple thing of field and knower of the field. Right. So, in Vedanta we think very complex. No, it's simple. It's this simple. And what is Prabhupada? Prabhupada always quotes this. We may say, well, you know, okay, this is Jnana Yoga, but we just follow Prabhupada. What if we use another wording for the Kshetra Kshetra Gya and this understanding? Practically every lecture Prabhupada says it. And what is that? Yes. We're not the body, we're spirit soul. It's the same point. But we're here, we're not the body, we're spirit soul. Yeah, I heard that because it was like that. But, you know, we're more mature and we're able to, you know, do all these different things and work with all this. But do you understand you're not the body, you are the soul? Yes, and this and that. Then why are you acting as the body? Right? So, if we put it into this terminology, this is the Jnana Yoga terminology. Kshetra, Kshetra, Gya, right? The field, the knower of the field. Then we start to think about it, right? It's something new, something different. We can't just pass it off. The mind cannot just pass it off. You know, been there, done that. You know, yeah. New bhaktas hear that one. Yeah, okay. You know, but I'm mature. I've been around a while. But if you've been around a while, then you should be quite expert at identifying yourself as the knower of the field and not as the field. Right. Does that make sense? Then it would be explained differently. I am the knower of the field, but due to a long being in the material world for a long time, we have these different habits and attachments that are there, so I am dealing with them according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra in such a way that the results are for Krishna. I get the experience of dealing with them, right? Because we remember Abhideya generates the experience. So I get the experience of dealing with them, but result being Krishna, it doesn't create karma, right? Because when you get an action and reaction, that is karma. But if there's no reaction, the reaction is not yours, where does it go? You did the activity, therefore the reaction belongs to who? Right? I do the work. Who gets the results of the work? Who gets paid? Right? We get paid. Who does the work gets paid. But if who does the work, the payment's for someone else, are you entangled in that? So that's nishkarmya. You do the activity. So much of the time we think it's the activity. Oh, he did that. therefore he's implicated. No. It's whether you do it, what is your consciousness in doing it? You do it for Krishna, you're not implicated. You don't do it for Krishna, you are implicated. So we have to be able to see here, so we have these certain things, we have an idea of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana that is there from the conditioned state, our own concept of religion, our own, you know, either by we've generated it ourselves or we've learned it from others, you know, other mundane concepts of these three. We have our idea religion should give a pious result. I've done all that. I went to Mangal Arati, I'm chanting my rounds. You know, why is this bad happening to me? Right? So is that why we joined? Right? It may be an impetus in the beginning, but is that something to maintain? Right? So then, this understanding of, how to say, kshetra kshetra-gya, therefore becomes very important to be able to analyze how we think we're the field. So then we can say, yes, we're like this, and now I'm using this field, I'm engaging this field for Krishna's pleasure. So that means it has to be according to Krishna's directions. And that means then I have to have the attitude that it's for Krishna. So by associating with it, then I get the results. Right? It means results, the emotional result. But the actual result is Krishna, so I'm not entangled. I don't become involved in this. Then you are freed. So the same activities that can make you conditioned are the same activities that can make you liberated. Right? You know. So we'll categorize different things and say, you know, this should be here, that should be there. So if someone's doing anything, you know, he's being nice to his family, therefore he's gross and attached and this and that. But why is he being nice to his family? If it's just because he's being nice because he wants them to be nice back and he wants to enjoy that, yes, he's entangled. He's being nice because that's his duty to be nice, right? And so then they're nice back, he appreciates that because it's the field he likes to work in. But he understands that them being nice back means he's performing his duties properly. Therefore, Krishna must be pleased. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like cooking. You're cooking for Krishna. Therefore, when all the devotees come and say, wow, that was really nice, I really like that, then you're happy because then you know then it was good. So the result for Krishna of the cooking was good. Right? Someone else may be cooking so that everyone afterwards tells them, oh, that was great, that was fabulous, yes, yes, you know, I know, I'm so nice. You know, like this. So that kind of thing we avoid. But there's no change in the cooking process and the devotees appreciating it. Both of them, the goal is the devotees will appreciate. Why? Because then you know Krishna's happy. So if you're taking care of the family, family's happy, that means Krishna must be happy because it's Krishna's concept. Krishna made families. Krishna made the rule about families. We didn't make them up. America did not make up the concept of families. God did, right? Mother Jashoda and Nanda Baba have been married for a long time, a lot longer than any Americans ever been married. Right? They're still married today, and you come back after, you know, eternity, they still will be. So they're doing something right, right. You never hear of divorce in the spiritual world. So somebody's doing something right. And they're married. In Vaikuntha, they're all married. They're all grihastas. Right? In Braj, basically they're all grihastas unless they're too young. They're all married. So that's not a problem. Right? And their families are happy. Right? Why? Because that's the way Krishna designed it. But it's done according to Krishna's rules. Therefore, it's connected to Krishna. Therefore, it's being done to please Krishna. Does Krishna want to walk around Vrindavan in a conjugal mood, and everywhere he looks, he sees families falling apart, and arguments, and, you know, husband and wife not being happy, kids being neglected, dysfunctional families and all that. Is that what inspires you? Right? Isn't that what it is? Yeah, you go away. Does that make sense? Point is if you're taking prasad and everybody else is enjoying the prasad and laughing and nice coffee, you're inspired to eat more. If you're eating prasad and someone over here says, "Wow, this is not very healthy. Ooh, so much ghee. Oh, so rich. Oh, so hot. So spicy. You know, how does anybody eat this? You know, this is crazy. You know, trying to kill us, you know, and all that." And, you know, so how does anybody eat? You know what I'm saying? When you sit down to eat, first thing to do is anybody who talks about health, shoot them. If you want to have good health, first thing is shoot the health freak. Then you can have a peaceful meal. Like that. You talk about health, not when you're eating, right? Does that make sense? It's the same way is that if Krishna's going to have a mood of conjugal rasa, that means all the conjugal around him must be nice. Does that make sense? So that concept is not bad. But the problem is if we take and go, "Oh, therefore my grihastha life is perfect, it's service to Krishna," you know, like that. No. You see it in connection to Krishna. It means every aspect of it. Then it is. But if not, it's all for you. And you get all the benefit. You know? And we can say, "Well, why so strict?" Well, what about shaving? You know? I only have to be conscious some of the time when I'm shaving. What happens that moment you're not conscious when you're shaving? You get cut. Right? So that's the point. You probably says you get a nice shave or you get cut. So you're conscious, then you get result. You want result. You want to taste the emotions of interaction with other family members. So how can you taste it if you're not conscious? You can't. Right? So therefore, if you're conscious, who are you going to be conscious for? Just for yourself? No, you have to be conscious for Krishna. So if you're conscious, then you can apply Krishna's rules. You say, following the rules, now that's a problem, then you can't enjoy yourself. So, I mean, when you're learning bicycle, how many rules are there? The person is teaching you how to ride bicycle. How many rules are there? Right? But you're happy to learn. You follow all the rules. Then after a while, the rules come naturally. Then are you thinking about all the rules when you're riding your bicycle? No, you're perfectly riding the bicycle. You just naturally follow the rules. Right? This is the process. Unknown, of course, other than making money or a skill or some sport, the Westerners don't know. They have no real skill or culture in culture. Right? Right? Unless you're, of course, from, what is it? I think Sweden, you have yogurt, you know, something like that. But other than that, then what's the culture? Like that? Maybe in your bread dough, maybe. You understand? Or kombucha or something. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, there's no culture. So there's no concept that this is something you have to do. Everything else you have to be expert at. You have to have a degree or you won't succeed. You have to have a piece of paper. You have to go to school. They regulate everything except for how to actually be a human being. Right? The most important thing in life is your relationships with other people. There's no training. Zero. Zip. Right? How many temples have nice programs and things? They'll have workshops for learning some skill. Management skill, you know, facilitation skill, this skill, that skill. But do they ever have one on how to actually be a human being and interact with another human being? Never. Zero. Right? Even they have the secret. Then what is it about? It's about money. It's about dealing in relationships for money. Right? How do you know that? Because the person who is running the thing has just charged you $100. $200 now. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I was thinking, how would it still be 100? 200, right? And that's only because their devotees are not trying to be like, but the guy, the professionals, is $1,000. So what is it there for? It's for them to make money. And then if you're smart, you can make money with it. You know, they're not out there because they care for you, and therefore, out of the kindness of their heart, they're trying to train you in human culture. No, it's money. Bus. That's all. Because if it wasn't money, why they're not teaching you about the kshetra and the kshetra gya? Because you can teach the same knowledge. Because Krishna says the secret of all secrets. Now that's the one worth killing somebody about. Like that, you know. The Egyptians are killing each other over the secret. But we have the secret of all secrets. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So there's nothing that they have to offer that is not right here in these pages. Gita already explains all that. Just somehow or another, devotees weren't smart enough to catch it. And then they have to figure that out from the karmis. And even they figured it out from the karmis, they're not smart enough to bring it back into devotional service. Not very smart. Something smart, but not smart enough. And therefore, what's the result, having studied such courses? Does it improve the devotional service? No, it improves your identifying with the kshetra. Now you're a better, you know, kshetra identifier. Yeah. A kshetrizer. Yes. Like that. But don't worry, you won't get be burned at the stake. Like that. Like that. Does that make sense? So this is this whole field, we can see it's an important aspect. It's an important aspect that we may think it has no relevance in our life, but it has great relevance in our life. It's going on all around us constantly. But because we're so conditioned to it, we don't recognize it. So that's what Vedanta is. That's why Vedanta starts with Atapto Brahma Jigyasa. When you ask, you know, what is Brahman? Who am I? What is going on here? That's when this knowledge starts. Then you can learn what is Kshetra and Kshetra Gya. Otherwise, before that, it's not of an interest. Right? Yes.
Why would someone enjoy this knowledge and profess it, but you know, fail to make an endeavor to apply it or use it or practice it?
Why would one enjoy the knowledge but profess it but not practice it? Basically, is because of the conditioned nature. They'll have a conditioned nature that leans more towards intelligence, towards jnana. So they may appreciate the technicality of it, and therefore, you know, memorizing the terms, how the different terms combine together, you know, just the concepts of it is great. You know, but they themselves may not apply it, because that means then the mind has to accept that. So all it is the taste of intellectualizing, that taste they appreciate. But actual, the need to find real conclusions in life is not there. Therefore, it's not practical. So that's generally the thing, is the practical person isn't interested in theory because it's not practical to them. They just see the field, you operate the field, you know, skillfully, cleverly, right? The intelligence they use is cleverness. You use it cleverly and it gets done. Why do we need to know the theory behind it, right? You know, they're ignorant too that the theory behind it will make for better application of your cleverness. And then the theorists, they like the intellectualizing, the concepts and all that, and how you can put this with this and that with that, and any new ways you can come up to view it, they appreciate. But you shouldn't say this has to be done. Right? They can appreciate a very clever philosophy or a clever, you know, theory. It's very clever, but when you say this is the way you have to do it, then their sentiments will get offended. Because their mind has only accepted the taste gained from intellectualizing. Right? So they don't do. So that's what's unique about Buddhi Yoga that we're not used to. Because if we say, you know, you just be practical, or, you know, don't get involved in your intellectual life. We can relate to both of these completely. But as soon as we say that you're going to use the intellectual platform of jnana and apply it in karma, that doesn't make sense. Because if I know, have all the knowledge, so therefore I'm the most expert at operating the field. But because of this platform of jnana, all the results of that field are not for me. Why would I work unless it's for me? You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't make sense. Right? So therefore it is so difficult to get through to the conditioned soul. Even though we've been hearing it since the day we joined. But it's still a bewilderment. You know what I'm saying? It means, you notice, when we talk on something practical, we talk on the culture like that, then the ladies are nodding their head, the men are sitting there bewildered. You know, we talk about, you know, practically being involved, getting something done, being efficient and all that, the men are nodding their heads and the women are going, isn't that a waste of time? Like this, you know, like that. But when we discuss this level here, everybody sits with blank faces. Right? Because it's something we've never done before. Right? Except in devotional service, you don't do both of these. You don't, means the jnanis, they use nice karmia, but it's still on the platform of, it's not for you, but it's sentimental. Right? So it's not actually technically correct. Because in the platform of jnana, you can't do those things. So they just say that to make the common people kind of supportive. Move them in that direction. It's just, you know, it's a nice sentiment. You know, like little kids, they, you know, play around and do something. It's a nice sentiment, but it's not taken seriously. Like that. So they'll also profess nice karmia. But the point is they don't do the karmas that they can be nice karmia about. Right? And the people that are performing the karma, how detached they can be. Oh, it's just duty, you know, service to your country, service to this, service to man, you know, respect to mother, mother and father, respect to the book. You know, something like this, they can get some sentiments going, so it's still religion. But it's that inspiration there that's making them do it, not the principle is that it's a higher cause for someone else to please someone else. No. You respect mother, respect. It's not so much for their pleasure. It's a duty. You know, so it's a higher position than doing it for yourself. But it's not, hasn't come to the point of, it's just naturalness of acting for the other's benefit. You're acting for the other's benefit, so it is nice karma, but it's not, you would say, that platform nice karma that's just comes, you know, how you say, by habit. So therefore they're not getting much realization there. So this combination where these two are put together, where you're going to do all the activities that a full upfront karmi would be doing. In fact, you're going to do it better than that karmi, but you're going to be doing it not for yourself, but for the benefit of the others you're interacting with, and specifically for Krishna's pleasure. And you're going to do it according to Krishna's rules, not your rules. That's unheard of. In fact, if you profess it, it's generally, how you say? Not appreciated, you know, to the point people actually speak against it. Understand? Yes.
The American paradigm is look after number one.
Yes, look after number one. Of course, it's not a bad paradigm if you identify number one as Krishna. And even if you identified number one as the kshetragya, as the soul, it might also start to work. But number one is your field, is the kshetra that you're aware of. It's your kshetra. Therefore, when your kshetra bumps into my kshetra and there's a problem, we got war. Right? So it's good. It makes them active. It gets them off their, you know, off their backsides. It gets them out to work. I mean, out of the house, of course. In the house, then, of course, the couch is the natural, you know, how you say, sacrosanct position, you know, of sitting there and keeping it warm, you know. Cold couches are very bad, right? You know, it's many surveys have been done and found that cold couches, you know, create so much problem like that. So therefore, you know, one is a, you know, what is it? Yeah. A lion in the chase and a couch potato at home, right? Isn't that how the saying goes? Something like that. So, therefore, when it comes to economics, when it comes to politics, when it comes to anything like that, artha, right? Then they're very active. But actually, when it comes to anything else, they're not very active. Those people who are active in kama, and that they're successful. Right? We're always saying, oh, they're so rich. What are they doing? They're doing something. That's why they are in their position. They're active, therefore they're getting results. So that's good. Prabhupada appreciated that about this whole Western culture, is that they're very active and they're willing to go out there and do something, and they want a result, and it's got to be good because they're the best, so what they do has to be the best and the result has to be. So Prabhupada's point was engage that in Krishna's service. Go out and do something special for Krishna, something unique, right? You know, his point was, you know, if the Westerners, you know, don't build this temple, then what's the use of all this, you know, feeling of, you know, wanting to get things done? But it's still not done. Right? Because they only know how to do stuff for themselves. That's the problem. They haven't been able to take the same mentality, bring it across to Krishna. Because the impersonal is, I'm active and dynamic like this for myself. So spiritual means I'm a complete useless and wuss for myself. You know, so then I'm spiritual. You know, you can see, they can be the temple president, nothing happens in the temple. And at home, they're doing fine. They got money, they got facility, everything's happening. But the temple, nothing's going on. Why? Because they haven't been able to figure out the same method they could use at the temple. All you have to do is connect it to Krishna. That's all. If they make that connection, it works. Like someone who was a chef before they joined, they make the connection that the same process works in Krishna consciousness. They're a great cook as a devotee. But if they don't, it doesn't go. Because they, oh, well, that's all karmi cooking, so I can't use that technique. They're saying they can't tell. It means, so if you can understand, it's just all you're doing is being conscious and connecting to Krishna. Then it works perfectly. So therefore, all these qualities of, you know, action and result and using the intelligence and applying, you could apply that anywhere. You could apply that in the devotional life, family life, social life, everything, and be successful. The guy is a multinational, multi-billionaire, but he can't hold a family together. How does he hold the business together? How sensitive he has to be to every aspect of his empire. So if he was that same sensitive in the family, it would work. But they just can't make the connection. Business is business, family is family. You know? So maybe the two don't get mixed. His wife doesn't tell him what to do in the business. That's fine. But it doesn't mean the technique is not the same. Or even if he tries the technique, like this modern self-help books, they tell you all this technique, you use it on your family, it doesn't work. Why? Because it's not the same mentality. That's in the business place, you deal like this. At home, you don't deal like that. That's a very good point. They haven't seen an example. That's why study of the Shastras is so nice. You see examples. Right? But they'll say, oh, well, that's 5,000 years ago. It doesn't apply today. Right? But that's stupidity. That's utter stupidity. Right? You know, because Draupadi wore a sari and Yudhishthir wore a dhoti, that's why they were interacting so nice 5,000 years ago. Is that how it worked? But if that was true, then all it is husband puts on a dhoti, wife puts on a sari, they should have a perfect marriage. So all this is just stuff that I don't even want. Here it is, people are there, but I am so jealous. I can't handle that anybody else can do it nicely. And my false ego is so great, I can't be wrong. I can't be the one standing out. It's my fault. I am responsible. My family life is terrible because I am 100% responsible. No, it has to be someone else's responsibility. I can't take that. My ego is too big. Therefore, if nobody's family work, then see, I'm also fine. It's just, hey, it's the way it is. It's Kali Yuga, Prabhu. What can you do? Right? So if Draupadi and Yudhishthira can hold it together, even though he had a whole kingdom, and he lost it all in a gambling match. Now, do you think what would your wife do if all your money that you had, you saved up, and you were doing really well, she was totally satisfied, and in one moment you lost it all due to some stupidity? How long is your marriage going to last? Okay, now they're holding it together. How? Right? Because of the culture, because of the training. So no one wants to admit that is the same now as then. Otherwise, why is it, you know, Romeo and Juliet still, gets first billing? And I said, Shakespeare was when? 1600s? So 400 years ago? Right? You know, why is it they're still making movies and stuff out of, what was that, the Iliad? Right? You know, Helen of Troy, that was how long ago? It was like, what, about 2,000 years ago or something like that? That's still, makes it. It's still, Caesar in Rome with his, it just goes on and on and on, right? More and more, themes and books and this and that are all some period stuff, A few hundred years ago, many hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago. Why? And it's still relevant in people's life. You still identify, it's not like you watch this and I can't relate to this, the moods and all that are so different. No, it's exactly the same. You know what I'm saying? The guy's wearing a three-piece suit, or the guy's covered from head to foot with mud. It doesn't matter. It's still the same moods. Right? It's just a different way to tell who's king. Before it was, who is covered with cow dung or not. And, nowadays it's, who has the fancier, who's got the Armani suit and who's, in jeans and a t-shirt, right? The president's in the jeans and t-shirt, right? So like that, that's where you can tell the difference, right? Things like that. Yes?
Why do we have so much faith in external results and not in experience and relationships?
Why in external results and not in relationships? Why do we have so much faith? Material happiness is gaining a result. That moment you get the result of what you were working for, you call that happiness. So because that's the definition of happiness, therefore the process of getting there is actually considered secondary. And, yeah. You also then have the aspect that it's a common ground. You know what I'm saying? So much emphasis is there. If you understand how the field works, then how you say, yeah. The man is looking at your performance of the activity, you get the result, you're happy. Right? Because you're the controller. The woman sees that the man has performed an activity, gotten a result. Now, that result then gives facility for interaction. Right? Because now you've increased the kshetra. The bigger the kshetra, the more option for happiness. Because happiness is the experience gained from operating the kshetra. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the common point is action and reaction between the two. But one is the controller of it, one is the enjoyer of it. Right? Or let's say the experiencer of it. One of them is the control of it, and having accomplished something in a logical, progressive way creates one's happiness or satisfaction. For the other, it's the experience gained in the application of the process, or appropriate application of the process that gives pleasure. Does that make sense? So now, if this is understood, then both, from their both same perspective, can engage in a common activity, and both of them be satisfied. Right? But you have to understand the field to actually make that work. Right? Then there's nothing lacking. Now, if you remove this knowledge of this, what's left is still the common point of action and reaction. Perspectives are different, but the point is the men are unable to see, due to lack of training, unable to see the woman's perspective on it and their needs in it. Therefore, he's just going to be what he is no matter what they do. Right? So then the women have to adjust to the principle that, you know, this action and reaction is all there is. So what little you can squeeze out of the action being performed, whether it's done nicely or not. If it's done nicely, great. But if it's not done nicely, that's as good as it gets. So it's something, it's some experience, something's going on. So it's better than nothing. Therefore, they will profess the same thing. It makes the common element. Therefore, men and women become result-oriented. And that's it. That's the basis of their whole existence. Just getting something done. That's what holds the family together. Okay, they're going out, they're both getting a job, they're working hard, you know, to get the house, pay off the mortgage, get the facility for the kids, this, that. So as long as that's going on, you know, without any, you know, any serious obstacles, that family stays together. But as soon as there's too much obstacles where that even that can't get done, that family falls apart because they don't actually have a direct relationship. Right? They have a common interest, but they don't have a direct relationship. You know, it's like allies. They have a common interest, but they're not necessarily friends. This is the state of modern relationships. It's always in the third person. That's why even when you're discussing, they don't like it when you use first person. If you want to say something's wrong, you have to use third person. They're comfortable. Problem is when you always use third person, then because it's third person, it's somebody else, so it doesn't apply to me. Sounds nice, it's great. Oh yeah, I wish all those other guys would get it together and follow this, but it's not yourself. And as soon as you start talking first person, everybody gets antsy. Right? I don't mean the ones with the, you know, the blue-tinted perms. I mean the ones, you know, the big slobbery kisses. I mean the ones that, you know, the little dinky ones that bite. Right? So, like that, then it's a problem, because then it's, oh, so harsh, so this, so that. No, but if you say it nicely, it was then intellectual. So therefore, they get, you know, it's a problem because of karma, attachments and karma, or you know, it sounds great, but no one will apply it because of the attachments and gyan. So it becomes a very difficult thing, how to balance it, how to say it nicely, that it's taken seriously. You know what I'm saying? But you still have to use third person. You know? But you can now and again touch on the first. You know. Does that sound like anything? So that's the common element. So why action and reaction is so becomes so important is because, one, we identify their happiness means the man thinks he got the thing, he's happy because he accomplished something. For the woman, she's happy because now there's more things in the field. By operating, you could get more experience. Right? If I have one thing, I can get one experience from it. If I have two things, I can get two different experiences. So if I have 10, I can get 10 different experiences. So the bigger the field, the more nice it is. Right? Seemingly. You know, that's the concept. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the man is happy, he's accomplished something. The woman is happy because it's been accomplished. And so the man thinks the woman's sharing the same actual kind of happiness that he is. But it's not. So therefore, he thinks, I've accomplished, so accomplished means finished. Then he goes and sits down on his couch. But the woman's thinking, he's accomplished it, now we can use that in the interaction. But it doesn't happen. Does that make sense? So therefore, then, it doesn't work. But that's the common point both can see. Right? But why they want them is different.
Is it okay for a man who's naturally has a result-oriented in nature to seek and understand that because I'm energy and spirit, therefore I can only be happy in experiencing?
Means that's there, that of course. Means that you need to know anyway, but it's not that he's result-oriented, that's not the problem. Result orientation is not a difficulty, because it's one of the three aspects. To be actually result-oriented, you have to have the other two anyway. You have to have focus, know who you are, what your field is, and what you can get from it, and you have to make the endeavors. So the sambandha and abhidhaya are automatically in good shape if you're result-oriented. Right? Or if you're work-oriented, but you can't work unless you know who you are and where you're going. Or it's, if you're identity-oriented, that's okay, but the identity has to be applied, so therefore you have to have a goal and an action. So what it is the scriptures and these modern methods, then they give you, they deal with sambandha, abhidhaya, and prayojana, but they emphasize one of the three. Or possibly some combinations, right? But their idea is the other two will come automatically, right? So they don't specifically necessarily completely define them. They may be hazy, but the one area they define very well. So that's the problem, is that's why then one, it works for the person who understands it, right? Because he automatically does all three, but when he teaches it to someone else, he's emphasizing his one, because that through that one he got realization of all three. But he teaches it, and then the other people only catch that one. They don't necessarily catch the other two, because it hasn't been defined as three. And therefore, then, even though he's speaking very nice things, it works for some people, doesn't work for others. So it leaves the door open for another, self-help guru to come forth with his philosophy. And in this way, then you have, 50, 60 of them, that are famous, well-known self-help gurus. But there's only one process, sambandha, abhidhaya, and prayojana. But they emphasize one of the three major, and then within each one, certain aspects. And so they're doing the rest of it unconsciously. Or unknowing, or they take it for granted. It's just like when we have a discussion on getting something done, we don't discuss gravity. Right? But it's understood. You're not careful, you drop the tomato, it hits the floor, it's not in as good a shape as it was before you dropped it. Right? You don't say, he drops the tomato, you don't say, hey, be more careful. Right? You don't say, don't you know that gravity is there and all this and that? You don't deal with that kind of thing. Does that make sense? You don't emphasize that. These people will take so much for granted. So the problem's not being result-oriented. That's fine, but to say that's the one and only conclusion. Everyone's got to be result-oriented. No, that's what worked for you. Because the other two you had, but when you added result, then it worked. Why? Because you had the other two. So that's the whole idea, is that you can be result-oriented, but you have to be able to understand it in the full picture. You want the result, but the result is for who? If it's for you, you'll get a little bit of, something from it. If you do that for others, you'll get more. from it. You do that for Krishna, you get the most. Right? We're souls, so we're not going to get much out of interaction with dead matter. Identifying as dead matter and interacting with it. Right? May work for, what is his name? Carlos, but it doesn't necessarily work for anybody else. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that you're not trying, it means whatever position you're in, you take that connected to Krishna. It's not that you have to give up the result-oriented thing. That doesn't matter. That you keep. That's good. That's what makes you active. Right? But you understand the principle? So because it's been done in this way, result-oriented or this, that, you get a result, then that's where it stops, then what are the women supposed to do? Right? Because the opportunities for relationship never happen. The facility is there, but the relationship doesn't happen because it's not operated. Right? Does that make sense? Or it's operated, it's seen as result-oriented also. But the result is, if the others are happy, you'll be happy. But the thing is, if I'm happy, everybody else should be happy. So everything's backwards. It means there's a complete, absolute lack of understanding of the process. Right? It's not that it's modern time, so it works differently. It's the same process. God made the process. God made man. God made the modes of nature. God made this. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, how it's going to work. It's going to work according to God's rules. That's all. It's not going to work in another way. People can sit around and say all they want that it's going to work according to their will. You know what I'm saying? You know, what is it? You know, I did it my way, you know, like that. So. But the point is if your way happens to be in line with God's way, it works. And if your way is not in line with God's way, it doesn't work.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.